Vastamai, hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. A document which paves the way for hundreds of new homes to be built in the East will go to Tynwald this month. Policy and Reform Minister Ray Harmer says he's not worried about population size as he brings forward the adopted Eastern Area Plan. The Salvation Army has opened a new debt advice service, and the Infrastructure Minister stands by his department's bid to leave silt buried off Purtown Road. Around 900 new homes could soon be built in the most populated part of the island, with Tynwald asked to approve the Eastern Area Plan later this month. It zones land for development and green space in Braddon, Douglas, Onchan and neighbouring villages. The government says it sets out a framework for how Douglas and those settlements will grow in future years by providing opportunities for employment, housing, protecting areas of the countryside, open space and recreation. A further 900 homes could be built under the plan on sites labelled Strategic Reserve if the population grows to a certain size in future. The area plan comes forward after a lengthy public inquiry was held where the public, government, landowners and developers all argued the case for what pockets of land should be used for. Former Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas steered it through most of the last 4 years. After he was sacked from Comyn earlier this year, it now falls on his replacement, Ray Harmer, to take it through Tynwald. I spoke to Mr. Harmer about the plan.
Well, it's hugely significant because it's all part of a process that's been taking many, many years back, if you like, even to the strategic plan in 2006, and then obviously with the southern plan back in 2011 and around that sort of time. And this has been worked on for many years. Obviously, the draft plan came back a couple of years ago, and then it went through a whole inquiry. An inspector looked at the whole piece of work, and then this is where it's come down to in terms of the adopted plan. But it's really important because it gives a firm basis for development, a firm basis of protecting green spaces, and a firm basis of sustainable development going forward.
So did you follow this plan throughout that process? Because obviously you were in a different role, but were you paying attention to what was happening?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a key part, and certainly some of the elements with infrastructure is absolutely key to the plan. So that's important. The active travel elements are really important. Housing need is really important. So yes, it's a plan that touches across all departments, but actually quite significantly in infrastructure.
Mm. Well, to give us an idea of the scope of this, what's the rough amount of sort of development in terms of the number of homes we're likely to see should the plan as it is progress through Tynwald without any changes?
So, yes, obviously the one first thing it can't be changed in Tynwald is either accepted or rejected at this stage. It's been through an inspector's report. There were about 111 recommendations. All but three have been accepted, and there have been three modifications that have a very sort of sensible sort of reasons behind them. But essentially, in the original draft plans, there were many areas were put up for potential development. That's been radically shifted down. So what you have is a very sustainable, moderate plan. And you have two elements to it. One element is about development that can happen and now, and then other parts of development that are what's called strategic reserve, which will only come into play should the population go above 89,000 or 38,317 homes. So it's really about how that sustainable development happens. So this is a plan that is for up to 2026. It takes into account 600 houses that have already been built, allows for another roughly 900 houses, that making around 1,500, which is what the inspector said was what was needed, and then has a strategic reserve for approximately 900 should the population exceed 89,000.
Well, population has been a big talking point with this issue. A lot of people picking holes in the 2016 census estimates, which were used as the basis of the plan initially. Where are we up to with the population as it stands? Do you see growth, stagnation, a drop? What's the picture look like at the moment?
So This plan takes very much into account the 2016 interim assessment, and that's why many of the areas have become part of the strategic reserve. So this has been adapted to the latest figures that we have. Obviously, what's going to be key is the 2021 census and how, and that will play a big part to whether the strategic reserve is unlocked.
So is this the right time to bring the plan forward, considering you've got a census on the horizon? Would it not be prudent to wait for that?
No. Absolutely not, because this is about a managed, sustained process and allowing land rather than the Wild West. Because without a plan, effectively, you have any piece of land is potentially up for grabs.
But surely it would make sense to have the most up-to-date information to inform the plan. Otherwise, you might build homes you don't need.
No, well, that's the whole point. The whole point of having a strategic reserve is that those are held should the population go up to 89,000.
But can you understand why people might be sceptical that once a site gets zoned as reserve, there's a feeling of inevitability, even if you say, no, it's not going to be reserved unless it gets to this point. There is still that fear about anything that's zoned for development.
Well, obviously, but there's always concerns. But the thing is, it has a proper process. It has to come through, has to be approved by the Cabinet Office before that strategic reserve is released. And I think if you look at the website, shows very clearly how massively, dramatically, the number of sites has reduced down. So actually, in areas like Lonnon, Laxey, Moran, Crosby, all of those areas have actually no longer for development. There's not even strategic reserves. Where you can see there is development is really around some infill areas. It's not just about houses, it's about employment and business and allowing the island to grow, which is absolutely critical at this stage, that we allow the island to grow, that we have a proper baseline and development plan. Another area is around comprehensive treatment areas that they need to be further developed. The worst thing in the world is just continually to say to delay and not allow the island desperately needs, particularly because of COVID.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Does COVID not change the landscape?
Absolutely not. What this does is this is so even more important that we have a sustainable plan, that we aren't, if you like, in a grey area, in a vacuum, that people have certainty and can manage and process that planning. This is critically important. And where it falls into the overall scope is that once the eastern area plan is completed, you then have the northern and western area plans, and then you have an overall Isle of Man strategic plan, one single plan, and that has to be the absolute right thing to do, rather than relying on some of these plans that it replaces go back to the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And really things have massively changed since 30, 40 years ago. So that's why this is important. There's another element that's really critical in this plan. It for the first time creates green spaces or green in the UK they will be called green belt areas, which prevent towns from coalescing. Yeah. And that's a really important bit. So they're a really important bit around Braddon, around Onchan, around between Bouldrine and Laxey. So for the first time it really highlights those areas. So that this is why it's a really important plan to set the island going forward, particularly for where the majority of the housing employment is, and for really to as part of our economic recovery into the future.
Well, there are people like population expert Paul Crane on the island that suggest that the Isle of Man's population since 2011 is pretty much the same, maybe a bit smaller than it was then, based on his estimates, based on some of the figures he's got from the Cabinet Office. Are you concerned about what he's saying is a lack of population growth in relation to the plan or not?
Not at all, because the plan is the ability for us to manage that development. Without an ability to manage to set those sort of sites that are available, we have no plan. And if you have no plan, then obviously that's a recipe for failure.
But if your plan accounts for too much, once homes are built, they can't be unbuilt.
Well, there's an absolute need for housing at the moment, absolutely a need for housing. There is a modest increase in population, and that's been demonstrated and continues to be. We'll have to see how that works. But the point is that many of these areas are around the strategic reserve again, which are there should the population. If you look at the overall plan, it's very modest and moderate. And the thing that has to be remembered, it's been something that has been worked on the process, due process has taken place, and there's been an inspector going through all of that. It creates these green spaces and creates a sustainable plan. A plan isn't around a fixed number of population. A plan is about how you have development briefs. It describes each of the areas and how those areas will improve or be developed or not developed or be green spaces, depending on where it is. But it gives a structure around the sustainable development of our island, and I think that's the most important thing, is around the sustainable development for our island.
Well, should the plan get Timwald approval, what happens next? Does it take immediate effect? I mean, what's the time scale for it being in force?
So it will be, if it's approved by Timwald, it will be adopted as at the 1st of December. And then it will take effect, and the old existing plans that have been sat there since the 80s will be rescinded.
And is there a transition in place for that, or is it literally a cut-off date and we might see all that development happening or trickling through in the years afterwards?
Well, a number of areas are already marked, some of the areas are already marked in development, so you won't see a massive shift. This is all about strategic planning. So it's, again, if you take those green spaces or green gaps between towns, it just prevents those from being being built on. Mm. So it protects those areas, for example, protects those areas that actually at the moment may be under full development, but under the new plan have been removed, you know, so it protects those spaces. So it's a really positive, and I think, you know, the key underlining principle is it fits with the strategic plan and is around sustainable development.
Now, a final question. In a former life, DOI minister, roads. Roads was a big topic of discussion in this because development is going to impact traffic. It's going to impact what you need in terms of road infrastructure. Were you content as minister then and minister of policy reform now that whatever the development number that comes out, the roads can handle it?
Yes, it is. In essence, I think it takes into very much consideration giving people the choice for active travel as well as cars and buses. And I think because it's quite sustainable, I mean, it's quite a modest growth. If we're, looking at 84,000 or so, and potentially 89,000, it's not huge amounts of growth. And obviously the active travel areas within 2.5 miles. The key issue is obviously around the access road, but there's a specific around the TT access road, but it's a specific policy that says that that needs to be developed before releasing, strategic reserves. So that's the point I'm making before, where it gives it maps an outline of what needs to happen to get to level. And I think you need to have that direction so that the island can move forward.
The Policy and Reform Minister, Ray Harmer. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Those struggling with financial problems are now able to go to a new debt advice centre opened by the Salvation Army. It's in the Isle of Man Business Park in Braddon, and sessions can be booked by contacting the charity. I spoke to Captain Dylan Nevoat and Coordinator Debbie White about the new facility.
So as the Salvation Army, we met with Timwald at the Select Committee on Poverty, and we recognise that there are issues of poverty on the island, may it be even in small pockets. So for many years, we've been offering practical assistance through our church and charity, but we wanted to provide a holistic service. So we felt that rather than just giving handouts, we wanted to provide a hand up to people. And it just seemed a natural progression to develop this free debt advice service. Mm.
So would you say debt and the issues around debt are prevalent perhaps over other issues in your experience?
So the demand with the Salvation Army is quite prevalent. Every year we're offering various items of support to give people sort of a step up stepping stones for help with white goods, school uniforms, furniture, gas deposits. And the demand is increasing with us. So we're working ever harder to make sure we help people where we can.
And debt is one of the issues that you've identified. Is that fair to say that's come through perhaps more than other things?
I think we can definitely recognise that debt is where people are perhaps struggling financially, which has an impact on their mental health. And so we want to make sure that we are just responding in that holistic way to meet the root needs of people.
So I'll bring you in now, Debbie. Can you tell us where the new centre is and how people can find it and find out more?
Yes, we're located up on the Isle of Man Business Park on Balacoche Crescent. So we have a phone line, mobile and email address, which we can provide. We are available in there from a Monday to a Thursday from 10 till 3. So if anyone wants to give us a call, we can have a conversation on the phone initially and then arrange an appointment with myself and another debt advisor.
Excellent. And I understand this is not something that's just crept up suddenly. You've been working towards this centre for a while. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. I mean, for some people, they might think, well, this is a response from COVID-19. I think it's very timely that this is launching. We've employed Debbie White in the middle of the lockdown, and it just seems a perfect time to actually respond to help people in a very real level. But this has been happening over the last couple of years, and we just want to have a well-rounded service to help the community.
Now, I did want to ask, I understand the Office of Fair Trading has its own sort of debt counselling and advice. How does this differ in that respect? Or is it just another offer, basically?
So basically, we're providing some choice here. The Salvation Army has debt advice services running in the UK. So we have around, I think, 20 plus centres already running out of Salvation Armies that's regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And it's very successful, offering life skills and just sort of this care when it comes to looking at people's debts and trying to find solutions and offer that advice. I would say, you know, we want to commend the OFT. They've been working very hard on the island, doing a great job. I think we're just enriching that choice on the island. And as we know, that there'll be greater need as people are facing more uncertainties with employment, economic challenges. And we just want to be here to step in the gap to make that difference.
If I'm a person who maybe is struggling with debt listening to this interview, I mean, what initial advice would you give?
Give us a call, have a chat through as to what your issues are, and we can arrange an appointment to see you. It is, like we said, it's completely free. We don't make any judgments about anyone. We'll go through a financial statement, so we'll try to maximise your income. So we'll look at what an individual may be claiming and what other options are available, giving some advice in those areas. And then obviously looking at an expenditure statement as well. So at that point, we'll look at what an individual is spending over a period of time, and actually whether there's things that actually can be reduced, or whether if someone's actually fully in debt and is having problems with credit cards or any loans, or is defaulting even on certain things, we can give them advice. We can speak to the creditors. Everything, like we say, is free. And an individual remains in control of the whole situation. So nothing is done without their authority. So once we're engaged with the individual and they authorise us to speak to creditors, we can then ask those creditors to stop interest whilst the individual engages with us.
Mm-hmm. And do you find creditors respond well to that instruction?
Yes, my colleagues in the UK have a great relationship with the creditors in the UK. And obviously we've got relationships here in the island as well, obviously, which we're currently forming those relationships. But yes, we have got, because of being a regulated institute in the UK, it's actually, you know, fully encompassing in that area.
And does that regulation extend to the operation on the Isle of Man?
Not in the Isle of Man. The Isle of Man hasn't got a requirement to be regulated, but we do adhere to the FCA in the UK. So we do have, complete our files according to what's required in the UK.
Brilliant. And is this all up and running right now? Or
it yeah? is up and running. So we've launched this week. We're really excited. If people want to get in touch with us, you know, you can have a look at our Facebook page or our website. Mm-hmm. Give us a ring. I would say don't be embarrassed. You know, before the debt gets out of hand, just come and talk to us. You know, have a cup of tea, a cup of coffee. We want to do some befriending, get to know you. And as we said, there's no obligations. It's all free advice. And we won't do anything without your permission.
Excellent. Now, I'm assuming you're expecting, as a result of COVID-19, perhaps more involvement in your service than perhaps if the pandemic hadn't arrived. Would that be fair to say?
Definitely. I think the demand is going to increase. So I think we've positioned ourselves in a perfect place now where we're ready to respond with this debt advice service. So we're not just giving out these handouts of practical support, but we're actually saying, let's sit down with you. Let's try and say that you're not walking alone. You don't have to be alone suffering and struggling with the burden of your debts. We're here for you. So come to us and we will help you as best we can.
Brilliant. Well, we mentioned a coronavirus just then. I just wanted to ask, aside from the service you've launched this week, how was it as a third sector organisation, as a church, as a charity, working during that period? I mean, was there much you could do?
Yes, we were very limited, obviously, with the COVID impact. And when the lockdown happened, it was very sudden. So we just adapted and we overcame, as everybody else did. We moved our offices to our home space, as you can imagine. But we did still get referrals from various agencies, government bodies, and we responded as best we could practically. Although we were very limited, a lot of our volunteers are older. We know the coronavirus discriminates against older people, so they needed to shield, to stay home. To stay safe. But we did set up a great network of befrienders offering pastoral support. And I had some great conversations with people just ringing me up saying, can I just talk to you about my issues? And almost just be a listening ear and moral support and be able to signpost people to the relevant supporting agencies. But we did our best and we got through it and we'll keep fighting.
Well, obviously you are there for the most vulnerable in society. I mean, did you feel a concern that you couldn't be there in the full capacity during a very difficult time for people?
Absolutely. I mean, we are a frontline service, so we felt very frustrated that we were limited, but we were very understanding and respectful of the government's guidance. I think stay at home, stay safe was a very good, clear message that we had to adhere to, for not just for the public, but for ourselves. So we had to safeguard everybody. But it was very difficult because our heart is to go and help people. And when you cannot actually engage with them on a personal, interactive level, it was very difficult. So we did feel the heartstrings tugged at when this all happened.
Debt Advice Centre Coordinator Debbie White and Captain Dylan Nevote from the Salvation Army. To find out more, you can call the charity on 675702 or head to iomdas@salvationarmy.org.uk. And finally on agenda, it was only supposed to be there for 5 years, but the Department of Infrastructure wants to keep contaminated silt buried at a site called Rockmount. The material was taken there from Peel Marina in 2015 and stored temporarily with 5-year planning approval. The DOI has now applied to planners to keep it there, saying it would cost around £500,000 to move. I spoke to Infrastructure Minister Tim Baker.
What's changed is actually, if you go up there and you look at it without knowing the technical detail, actually it's all revegetated, it's all settled in, the runoff has been properly managed and monitored. Actually, it just looks like another field near Portown that's scrubbed over. And so the question is, why would you disturb that? If it's working okay, why would you spend an awful lot of money in digging it up, moving it and putting it in another, effectively, hole in the ground in another part of the island? It just doesn't seem very sensible. And if we can reach an agreement to leave it where it is, that's best value for the public purse. So we're going through a proper process and we're, you know, if it's not appropriate, then it won't be done. So you know, obviously we've got to get planning consent. And we need to, and we are engaging with the with German parish commissioners around the covenant aspects of it.
When it was put in there, I suppose it was always meant to be well managed and well looked after. It was never meant to be a danger site.
No.
So I mean, why does the fact that now it's still well managed and still not a danger site, why does that change anything? Surely, if the promise was there, we've got to take it out. I mean, you still need to deal with all the other silt as well, long term. Well, I mean, surely you need to find a proper solution for all of this.
Well, the argument would be, why is what we've got not a proper solution? You've already said it's not dangerous. It's been well managed. If we can reach an agreement for it to stay where it is, then why move it?
What does that do for the department's sort of credibility when it comes to promises?
Well, I think if we just went in and just unilaterally said we're leaving it there, tough. Then I don't think that would be the right approach. But what we are doing is we're engaging. So we've already had a couple of meetings with the commissioners in German. and we floated the concept and talked about it. They could understand, they could see the bigger picture, and so the conversation was about, well, could we find a way where they would be comfortable, what needed to happen to make that something that they would accept. And I think everybody understands that there's no value in incurring a lot of scarce public money in digging something up, transporting it through HGV lorry movements and then putting it somewhere else. That doesn't add any value to the island.
Infrastructure Minister Tim Baker. Well, that's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon. And you can listen again to this edition via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, Guru Mayu and goodbye.